in chapters 21 and 22, in both his reputation and his position as a member of King Saul's court. Saul's son Jonathan and David have formed a very deep friendship, and they have made a covenant with one another. And Jonathan knows that David is going to become king, and it's not going to come to Jonathan himself, who is actually, we would call them, the crown prince. King Saul's growing an obsessive, paranoid, relationship, his way of relating, his relationship with David has worsened such that it's known now pretty publicly that Saul intends to kill David. And these outbursts that Saul has had that were followed with regretful tears have grown now to just all-out hostility. And in these chapters, much of the life of David is contrasted with other characters, other people that he meets. There's David and Goliath. There's David and Saul. There's David and Jonathan. And each person's actions and the way in which they respond to David or live their life, they provide a contrast to David. In chapters 21 and 22, David continues to be contrasted with King Saul. But in addition, you have David and Achish, who is king of the Philistines, David and the king of Moab. And fleeing from King Saul, it provides the circumstance which furthers this great theme of David's life. And this is one that I want you to try and remember, hook into, and hold on to. The great theme of David's life, you know, if he is to be a model for us, it's not going to be in his victories over Goliath or his victories over the Philistines. The model that David is for us, the great theme of his life is refuge. Where does David find refuge? To whom does David flee? And that's being contrasted over and against where it is that others turn. And it is the distinguishing mark of the Lord's anointed and of the faithful. To whom do you flee? And today as we look at David and King Saul and Doeg, they provide contrast to the sorts of places that we run. And specifically, we're just going to be looking at, right, where does David run? Where is King Saul? Where does he go to? Where's Doeg the Edomite? Let's look at where people flee. Where it is that they go to. Upon learning that King Saul intends to kill him, where is it that David goes? David first, right, he seeks a passing refuge in the tabernacle, the house of the Lord. Now, fleeing Saul, he comes to the priest of the Lord, Ahimelech. And telling a lie, David tells Ahimelech that King Saul has sent him and his men on a special mission. David has an explanation to make, right, about this secret mission. Because he or any of those with him look as if they have prepared for anything. He has no provisions. David has no weapon with him. He's left in haste. But apparently, this task for which he says that Saul has sent him on was more urgent for him to go than it was for him to go prepared. And now David has come to the Lord's tabernacle and to his priest for help. David asks for 5 loaves, but there's a problem. Now, Kevin, can I have my slide for my map? Or there we are. Great. All right. So here is a picture here. It's from the north of Judea. It's looking across Benjamin down to over here. Tel Azekah is where the battle was. You can see Gath up here in the corner. The Brook of Bezor we're going to get to in a couple weeks in Ziklag, but you can kind of see the land as it goes. So Gibeah of Benjamin is where Saul is, and David has fled across the mountain and up and across another mountain to Nob, and that is where the tabernacle is. And if you could go to the next slide, we can see this from another vantage point. This is from, you can see the Mediterranean Sea. This is looking up north. And this is David's world. Mount Gilboa is where it is that Saul is going to be killed. But all of the events that take place in David's life are right around here in this region. Okay, so, you know, Ziklag looking north. So I just want you to have this kind of perspective of what it is that's going on. The distances that we're talking about are not great. I mean, it's a lot to walk, okay? But if you were to get into a car, you wouldn't think it was much bigger than, you know, just traveling, you know, from here to Raleigh, okay? So anyways, that's the perspective. David flees, right? He flees Gibeah and he goes over to Nob, which is not very far, but he's in a great hurry. And he asks the priest for 5 loaves. But there's a problem. If we go back to the outline now. Ahimelech doesn't have any common bread. All that he has are the consecrated loaves, which have just been replaced with the fresh loaves of the bread of the presence. Every week, new loaves were taken in and they were put in the tabernacle on the table of the bread of the presence, right? And they would sit there for the week. And then after the week, they would be brought out, and only the priests were allowed to eat that bread. It was consecrated bread. But Ahimelech, not wanting to see the king's man, who says he is on a king's mission, go away hungry, he offers the bread that he has, the 12 loaves that have been taken from the tabernacle. His only provision is that the men themselves have to be ceremonially clean. And David assures Ahimelech that no one has had any time for that, which is talking about their relationships with women. He says, when the men ride out, right, whenever it is that they're sent on a mission, they are consecrated when they go out. It's an ordinary mission, how much more, right? The vessels of the young men are holy. Even when it's an ordinary journey, he says in 21:55, how much more today will their vessels be holy? Now, next, David asks for weapons because he doesn't have any weapons with him. And it's a surprising request. David's consecrated, but he's not equipped. Does that sound like ministry? Consecrated, but not equipped. Sent on a mission, but not really knowing how it is that you're going to accomplish. Right? How is it that David could be sent by the king weaponless? It really does beg a question. But it's really been the story all along in David's life. Did David defeat Goliath with battle weapons? Right? Just as David said, it is the Lord who fights for Israel and thus has given him the victory over Goliath. David embarks on his king mission weaponless. And you're going to see that over and over again in the life of David. Ahimelech tells David, he says, there aren't any weapons here except Goliath's sword, which is wrapped up and tucked behind the ephod of the high priest. And David says, there's none like it. Give it to me. And so he takes it. And I think that's the last that we see of that. David begins now a secure, a roundabout journey, which is why I wanted you to show that. He's going to all of these places in 21 and 22 and following. He's traveling through southern Israel and Judah into the realm of Achish, who is the king of Gath. Do you remember where Goliath was from? Kind of an odd place to seek refuge. You might have to be crazy to do something like that. The Philistines recognize David, and David recognizes that he's not safe. While he is hiding out in Gath, he begins to pretend that he himself is crazy, that he's unreasonable, that he's unstable. He's unreasonable and unstable, but unthreatening. But ultimately, he makes himself unwelcome. And Achish says he's got enough madness in his house as it is. He doesn't need another one, so he sends David away. And David goes from there to the cave of Adullam, where there are many others that come to him and rally to him. His skeptical and now marked family, because David is being hunted, his family is now vulnerable. They come to him, the distressed, the bankrupt, right, the bitter. They all fly to David there at the cave of Adullam, and his numbers increase to about 400. And from Adullam, David goes to Moab. Now, why do you think he goes to Moab? Well, his great-great-grandmother, Ruth, was from Moab. And so He leaves the Judean highlands, travels down into the Jordan Valley River Plain and across the Jordan River into Moab, and seeking, you know, this is a reasonable place of refuge. And there, David's parents are kept safe from those who would kill David and wipe out his family. But David is told by a prophet that he is to not remain in the stronghold there, but that he is to depart and that he is to go into the land of Judah. And so David leaves his parents, and he returns to Judah, to the forest of Hereth, which is near his stronghold in Adullam. Right? So David is moving all around. He's visiting, you know, he's going to all of these places. Where is it that you go to when you're distressed? We see some good things. We see some not so good things in the way in which David responds. The narrative then kind of turns its attention to King Saul. Now, where is it that King Saul is? If you've read 1 Samuel up to this point, you'll see that King Saul, he seems to offer some potential. But in some senses, there's no word of doom that's greater than to say they had potential, they have potential. It's almost like setting them up. A person who is that gifted naturally or that skilled or has that much going for them, it can be an oppressive compliment, and people can buckle under the pressure of it. Right? For those people who have had things come easily to them, failure is not something that a person like that, their character, is able to recover from. Resentment, envy, presumption, hard-headedness, they're all character flaws that Saul suffers from. But he was not saddled with them. Rather, Saul cultivated them. He grew them over and over again, relying on himself, right? And we begin to see it kind of comes to fruit in the way in which he whines after hearing that David has been discovered in Judah. "Hear now, O people of Benjamin," he says. "Will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you commanders of thousands and hundreds and of all you have, and yet all of you have conspired against me? No one discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse." Now this is it, right? "None of you is sorry for me." That could be my life verse. I mean, isn't that it, right? All you people, nobody's sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as to this very day, right? King Saul, right, his self-absorbed collapse seems to here have completed its implosion. He's now turned and he will now set his will to destroying David. And this turns us to the third character, right? So where does Saul go, right? You know, just the self-pity, the self-regard, his own estimation of what he is due, you know, his resentment. But it turns us to a third character who was introduced at the beginning in chapter 21. But, you know, that just that mention of his name, but then now he's brought back in. It's a great bit of storytelling. We almost have forgotten about him. Doeg the Edomite. Where does Doeg go? What kind of person is he? In chapter 21, we read that there was a certain man of the servants of Saul who was there that day at the tabernacle where David appears asking for bread. He was detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg the Edomite, the chief of Saul's herdsmen. Now, the title, chief of herdsmen, is not used anywhere else in the Bible. It's a really curious expression. There's a lot of debate as to what it is that means. But Doeg is named, and it's significant. His name also doesn't appear anywhere else in the Bible except these two chapters, except in Psalm 52, which if you have time today, take a look at Psalm 52, because David wrote that in response to what Doeg did. Doeg seems to be an opportunist. He has aspirations, ambitions. He's present with Saul as Saul is bivouacked and sitting beneath this tamarisk tree on the height, right, of that mountain. He must be well known enough to be there and to be standing around. But we also might include that he wasn't so important of a person. Hearing Saul complaining that nobody likes me, everybody hates me, I guess I'll eat some worms, right? Doeg sees his opportunity, right? Stepping out from kind of behind, maybe, you know, out of the shadows, he steps forward, and we read, "Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servants of Saul, 'I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for me, and for him, and gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine.'" Right? Doeg seems to be the kind of person who is where he is supposed to be, but not because he necessarily wants to be there. In chapter 21, we read that he witnessed David's conversation with Ahimelech because Doeg had been detained before the Lord. Detained is not a worship word. I hope that you don't use that in description to your experience of being here on a Sunday. I would have come sooner, but I was detained at worship. That doesn't sound very glorious. So he's in a place that's a good place to be, the Lord's tabernacle, but did he want to be there? Can you imagine how lucky, though, having been detained there, that how lucky he felt himself to have witnessed such an interaction between Ahimelech and David? Right? That information shared at the right time might prove very valuable and effective for his own aspirations. In Psalm 52, David has this to say about Doeg. He says, "Your tongue plots destruction like a sharp razor, you worker of deceit. You love evil more than good and lying more than speaking what is right. You love all words that devour, O deceitful tongue." Right, Doeg, what kind of person is Doeg? That deceitful tongue is maybe a great place to kind of camp out if you're a Lord of the Rings fan. Doeg is a worm tongue. Let me tell you the kind of person Doeg is. Here's another example. During World War II, Allied airmen, pilots, bomber pilots, fighter pilots who crash-landed in Switzerland were detained by Switzerland for the rest of the war. You were basically held captive. You weren't allowed to return to England or to the United States. Now, they were generally given something like a house arrest, but they weren't allowed to return. And if they tried to return to their units by escaping, right, by trying to walk across the border or escape across the border, they were imprisoned like a common criminal. And these prisons were no better than concentration camps. One such camp was called Valvillermoos. And it was under the command of a Swiss army captain named André Beguin, who was himself a Nazi. Captain Beguin was a Doeg, if ever there was a Doeg. The conditions at Valvillermoos were so bad that American officials didn't believe the stories that were being told about it. Nobody could treat people that badly, they thought. And Switzerland, who was sending Red Cross workers into Germany, right, to examine and inspect and monitor German POW camps, had no interest in inspecting one of their own. Right. Reports about Beguin and Valvillermoos largely commended the camp, though. Their own self-reporting about the camp seems to have been shiny. One report says that there isn't any abuse at Valvillermoos, but strict control on behalf of the commandant of the camp. There was iron discipline at the camp, another reported, and this was necessary. A reporting major, kind of responding back and kind of going and inspecting the camp, he made his report And he said that Beguin was the dream man to operate such a camp. The highest praise that that major could bestow on Captain Beguin was this: the camp documents were kept in perfect order. Do you know that kind of person? This is the sort of person Doeg is. See the man who would not make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of his riches and sought refuge in his own destruction. When ordered to kill Ahimelech and his children, Saul's own kinsmen would not do it. Doeg, though, orders are orders. Not only did he kill the priests, the 85 priests in that town, but he put to sword the people of Nob, whether man, woman, child, infant, ox, donkey, or sheep. That's the kind of person. Where does a person like Doeg go, relying on his riches? David, right, has his shortcomings as well as his faithfulness. David points us to the Lord's anointed. David is not one who always gets it right, and that's something that we have to remember as we're reading 1 and 2 Samuel. He doesn't always get it right, and we're making a turn here in the next couple of weeks in which we're really going to see that manifest itself. And even here in this passage, we see hints of it, right? He lies to Ahimelech. He seeks refuge with Achish, the king of Gath. He hides out with his family in the neighboring kingdom of Moab. It's all understandable, but it's not necessarily commendable, is it? Yet when Ahimelech's son Abiathar comes to tell David what Doeg has done to the residents of Nob and the Lord's priest, how does David respond? David doesn't deflect. He doesn't shrink away. He says, "I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house." That is, this is on me. I saw Doeg, and I knew he would say something. Right? David owns it, and he offers Abiathar a refuge. Stay with me. Do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life. With you and with me, you shall be in safekeeping. So just as the skeptical, the distressed, the bankrupt, and the bitter find refuge with David, so do the persecuted find refuge with the Lord's anointed. Psalm 34 is the other psalm that is written in response to the events of chapters 21 and 22. In 32, 1 through 7, David writes this: "I will bless the Lord at all times. His praise shall continually be in my mouth. My soul makes its boast in the Lord. Let the humble hear and be glad. I sought the Lord, and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces shall never be ashamed. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him from all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them." To where do you run? Right, let's go to the true Son of David, the Lord's anointed, the one who, though he was rich, yet for our sakes became poor, the one who, though dwelling in light in eternity past, became homeless to seek us out and to deliver us from our persecutors, our sin, the judgment of death, our accuser, the devil. Right, in Jesus Christ, the true Son of David, the Lord's anointed, we find comfort and safety.